to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Saturday, April 3rd. You're listening to the Political Cesspool on AM 1380 WLRM Radio here in Memphis, Tennessee, and of course on the internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org and going out on the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, tonight's show, if you hear the excitement in my voice, it's coming straight from the heart because tonight's show is going to be an absolute grand slam for you, and I'll tell you why. Tonight, our featured guest is going to be Richard Spencer of Alternative Right. It's a new conservative or paleo-conservative webzine, as he calls it. Great work is being done there with Richard's brand new enterprise, and he's surrounded himself with an amazing amount of talent, including previously featured political cesspool guests Peter Brimelow of VDare fame, Dr. Paul Gottfried, and Alex Kurtigick. Our topic with Richard Spencer, who will be appearing during tonight's second hour, is building an independent alternative right that is not under the control of the neoconservative establishment and their kingpins, William Kristol, Rupert Murdoch, etc. Now, that's coming up during the second hour. But also tonight, during the third hour, we are going to be kicking off our annual salute to Confederate History Month this week. Scott Goldsmith of Dixie Republic will be joining us during the third hour as we begin to celebrate many pro-South guests and subjects during this annual April extravaganza. All throughout this month, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about what the South means to us and why we go to such great lengths to celebrate its traditions and promote Confederate heritage. Our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org and the blog has been on fire the last few days. We're going to welcome several guest authors this month as we feature a series entitled Why I Love the South. So be sure to tune into our show each and every Saturday night this month from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time and make our blog one of your daily reads. And to get your reading started, we have published just today the classic Sam Dixon paper, Shattering the Icon of Abraham Lincoln. Read it, pass it to your friends. I tell you, it really puts history into accord with the facts, as they would say over at the Barnes Review. Sam Dixon's scintillating booklet, yours to read tonight on thepoliticalcesspool.org, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Keith Alexander, do you share the excitement tonight as we kick off Confederate History Month with a great lineup of guests and stories?
Oh, look, I'm about to pinch myself. I agree totally, too. The thing about Lincoln is that he was the first big government maven to hold the presidency. He made John Adams's tyrannical Alien and Sedition Acts look like child's play. Well, and I think that Sam, throughout this month, we're really looking forward to revisiting our Confederate heritage and telling you why the South was right and has nothing to apologize about regarding the Civil War.
And we're going to be talking about all that and more during the third hour of each broadcast this month, except for the last Saturday of April, April 24th. The entire three-hour program is going to be dedicated to Confederate issues and Southern partisanship, if you will. So Confederate History Month kicking off tonight in the political cesspool. But first, we have some variety of stories to bring to your attention during tonight's first hour with Keith and myself. And the first one is a blog entry that I wrote this week entitled The Itawamba County Malcontent. As you know, we've been following the story of this so-called high school lesbian in Itawamba County, Mississippi for a few weeks now. You might recall that the Christian-hating folks over at the ACLU sued the local school district for frowning upon Constance McMillan showing up at the prom wearing a tuxedo with her girlfriend. Well, as history continues to repeat itself, a federal judge ruled that the 99.9% of the population that is of sound mind must cater to the wishes of this single malcontent who is forcing her will on the good people of rural Mississippi. The school board eventually decided to scrap the prom altogether rather than being forced to betray their convictions and act as though homosexuality is something that should be tolerated. It isn't. And for the record, and for what it's worth, I don't hate Constance McMillan, but I do believe that she needs therapy. Keep in mind that until 1973, the American Psychiatric Association officially listed homosexuality as a mental disorder. These were, needless to say, more sensible times. But of all the commentaries I've read on this story, one of the Political Cesspool's listeners posted this reply on our blog that sums up my feelings perfectly. And I'd like to showcase his thoughts by sharing them with you now and then turning this article over to Keith. And here's what one of our fans wrote on our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. This is indeed a highly disturbing story. It's disturbing enough that the conservative white majority of Mississippi Itawamba County School District are being punished and denied their right to express their conservative beliefs and values by a lone liberal judge and a pack of leftist loonies at the ACLU. What makes this story absolutely ghastly is that the pudgy teenage lesbian is at the center of the story, is being lionized and cheered on like a sort of perverted heroine fighting a noble gay crusade against the evil, intolerant, i.e. normal, non-pervert, healthy, wholesome white people of Itawamba County. The pudgy teenage lesbian is being showered with gifts and goodies from Hollywood celebrities. She's gaining fame and recognition from the mainstream media. Countless millions of Americans have heard her story. What message does this story send to America's youth? That being a homosexual or pretending to be one is a quick and easy way of attaining fame and fortune? Unwittingly or not, Constance McMillan is a subversive agent of the cultural Marxist left. She has learned at a tender age that it's highly rewarding to be on the side of the cultural Marxist left. Will this story, replayed ad nauseum in the mainstream media, inspire a legion of youth to take up the gay rights advocacy throughout small-town America? And Keith, to have people like this gentleman in our audience is what separates the political cesspool from all of the pretenders out there like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. His critiques and concerns are spot on. Constance McMillan has been on the Ellen DeGeneres show and has been showered with fortune and fame for having played her role in the ongoing culture war. And folks, if you want to read that blog entry, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org. But Keith, I turn it over to you for some commentary.
Well, this is an example of what is a little known concept in the field of legal ethics called barratry. Barratry is the setting up of a lawsuit. It could be the setting up of a rear-end collision lawsuit by having somebody intentionally stop in front of someone else so that they could have a wreck and they could make a claim against an insurance company, for example. Barratry also involves the standard modus operandi of the NAACP and the ACLU, which, by the way, is over half Jewish in its membership, which is rather odd since Jews only make up 2.5% of the U.S. population. It bears out what we point out quite frequently, which is that the Jewish population is the most liberal segment of the white population in America, and as conservatives, that's good information to know. Now, this is barratry just like the Rosa Parks case in 1956 in Montgomery, Alabama. Rosa Parks was this pale-skinned, saintly-looking black lady who just happened to be the head of the Montgomery, Alabama NAACP branch. She was specifically sent to the Highlander Folk School in Mont Eagle, Tennessee, to learn the techniques and strategies of cultural Marxism and nonviolent protest. There had been a real case where a rowdy black teenager, 15 years old, pregnant, unwed mother, was asked to go to the back of the bus and refused to go. But, of course, this was not the ideal plaintiff for the NAACP, so they decided to reconstruct this whole scenario using the saintly Rosa Parks as the named plaintiff in this case. Well, that's exactly what the ACLU has done, James, in this Itawamba County affair. What they're doing, they picked Itawamba County on purpose. And let me read you something here that I think will kind of open people's eyes. Ever wonder why this little morality play was set up in Itawamba County, Mississippi, by the ACLU? I assure you it was a setup, as surely as Rosa Parks' arrest in Montgomery, Alabama in 1956 was a setup by the NAACP. Itawamba County is a predominantly white hill country county in Mississippi. The black population of Itawamba County is only 7%, compared to the Mississippi average of 37%. Why not set this whole little episode up in Coahoma County in the Delta region, where the black population is 74%. After all, Southern blacks are notorious for being even more adamantly opposed to homosexuality than Southern whites, and use terms like sissies and punks to describe them. Never call a black man a punk unless you want a fight on your hands. Your radio listener was right, James. The invisible hand of cultural Marxism was directing this entire vignette. According to cultural Marxism, whites are the universal oppressor, while both blacks and homosexuals are among the ranks of the oppressed victims.
Hey, Keith, push pause on it right there. We're going to resume play after a couple of words from our sponsors. Folks, we're revisiting the Itawamba County scenario, and we're going to do so with some updates and follow-ups in just a moment. Stay tuned. Keith Alexander and I will be back in just a moment.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here at the top of the program tonight, and we have got a program chock full of stories and guests to bring to you this evening. But at the beginning here, we are revisiting the story from Itawamba County, Mississippi, where Constance McMillan basically forced the cancellation of her school prom because the ACLU ruled that she was allowed to go there against school wishes and school rules, wearing a tuxedo with a girlfriend, even though that is an affront to basic American Christian culture. And as a result, this story has taken a life of its own. This 18-year-old so-called lesbian has received a $30,000 scholarship from Ellen DeGeneres. She has just been on the front page of just all the newspapers in the country, receiving all sorts of lavish praise from the television outlets and so on and so forth. And we're revisiting it this evening because we have found a couple of other side issues we want to share with you, and we've been getting some good comments on the blog. So we wanted to kind of rehash this at the top of the program tonight before moving on. But Keith, a moment ago, just before the break, you were sharing with us why the ACLU and why the cultural Marxists chose to allow this scenario to be played out in all-white rural Mississippi County rather than a black Delta County in Mississippi. And basically the reason for that was because blacks are equally appalled by homosexuality in this instance, but they certainly can't be the villains here because they have special victim status as well, so this had to be in an all-white county.
That's right. It's a case of barratry. It was picked by the ACLU to bring this suit and to commit this provocation in virtually all-white Itawamba County in the Hill Country section of Mississippi rather than in the Delta, which is predominantly black, like Tahoma County, which has a 74% black population. I guarantee you that if they had had a black lesbian in Tahoma County propose to come to the high school prom dressed as a male in a tuxedo, that the all-black school board in Tahoma County would have just as surely stood up and said, no way, just like Itawamba County. But see, that doesn't fit the cultural Marxist paradigm. It wouldn't do to have conflict between two subgroups of the cultural Marxist proletariat, which would be homosexuals and blacks. This would just confuse the audience. So no wonder Hollywood loves this story. This is why Hollywood just can't get enough. Ellen DeGeneres has Constance McMillan on the show, gives her a $30,000 college scholarship. Chelsea Handley of Chelsea Lately, part Jewish, part Mormon, swinger who is just
yeah. She's got a so cool nightly talk show on ETV, Entertainment Television, and she's your basic frumpy 40-year-old, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, wannabe Jewess, I guess. I don't know what.
Well,
the
thing is, they're not going to pick a real Jewess because it would just be too ugly to have somebody like Sarah Silverstone or Gilda Radner or something like that up there. Of course, Gilda's dead now.
Nevertheless, Chelsea had something to say about
it. James, is they're definitely trying to, this is the reason Hollywood likes it, because it's the script is straight from central casting. I have no doubt a movie's going to be made about it in the near future. Poor little Constance needs to get herself an agent pronto to make sure she gets a piece of the action in return for all of her exquisite suffering.
Well, what did Chelsea have to say about it? I have to ask, or dare I ask?
Well, you know, I was channel surfing the other night, and I occasionally like to stop there to hear her smart-alecky comments. But she said, she brought this up, and Chelsea's comment was, well, if she has enough money to rent a tuxedo, she also has enough money to buy a bus ticket and get the hell out of Mississippi.
That, you know what? I will say this. Words. Keith, let me say this. That is an excellent idea. I actually, for the exact opposite reasons, agree 100% with Chelsea on this one. You know,
well,
supposedly,
Chelsea is just falling in line. She's falling in place with her predecessors. I remember when I was a little kid, I was just really taken with Jerry Lewis. I thought he was just the funniest guy, and I just thought he was a laugh riot. But I changed my mind when I heard him say on national television that whenever he made a transcontinental air flight, he wanted to know when he was flying over Mississippi so he could use the bathroom. See, this is the type of, this shows you exactly what the Jewish hierarchy, Chelsea Handley, people like Jerry Lewis, real name Jerome Levitch, think about flyover country. Flyover country being red state America, where Gentiles prevail, not only in numbers, but in, you know, cultural control. They despise red state America, and quite frankly, I have never tuned in to the muscular dystrophy Labor Day telethon or done anything, gone back to see a single Jerry Lewis movie since the time that he made that comment in the early 60s.
Well, Keith, let me say this also. The Political Cesspool radio program, let me give you a different perspective on this. And I think it's one that should be mentioned because if our show doesn't do it, God knows no one else will. And I haven't, out of all the news stories that have been written or broadcast about this story, I haven't heard this slant on it. But I got to say before I share with you that the Political Cesspool is the voice of the conservative right. All paleoconservatives, regardless of religious affiliation, we're your voice. And we're not an explicitly Christian program, but I will tell you that the hosting staff and production crew of this show do adhere to Christianity, and that there will always be some overlap between our politics and our faith. We're excited about Easter tomorrow. And that being said, what does the Bible say about homosexuality? Now, you might not know for sure if you've gone into any of these mainstream churches these days with the lesbian ministers.
Mainline Protestant in particular.
Yeah, they're all watered down to be politically correct, even the Baptist churches. So let me clear this up to you. What does the Bible say about homosexuality? And I'll make a point with this. 1 Corinthians 6, 9, and 10 reads, "Do you not know that the wicked will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Homosexual offenders shall not inherit the kingdom of God." In the Old Testament, Leviticus 18:22 reads, "Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is abomination." And I don't mean to sound preachy, but I did want to infuse those scriptures into the debate to remind the Christians of Itawamba County, Mississippi, and make no mistake about it, that is Christian country, that according to their faith, they are justified in their stand.
Well,
and if they do believe in the Christian faith, they need not apologize to anyone, kowtow, acquiesce in any way. Don't do it, because you're right, and know that you're right. Be strong in your convictions and charge forward, and don't let a couple of degenerates like Chelsea Handley and some of these perverts in the media let you believe that you are backwards. Live life the way you want to live. Chelsea is right about one thing, Keith. You know, this Constance McMillan should leave Mississippi. Mississippi isn't a state for her. Mississippi shouldn't
conform Mississippi. Don't let the door hit you in the ass when you leave, as they say.
Well, that's right. I mean, the state of Mississippi and the people of Mississippi shouldn't have to conform their beliefs to placate Constance McMillan. But if Constance McMillan can't stand to live in Mississippi, if she isn't part of the values that are in play there, she should move to New York or California or another state.
That's where she needs to go.
She should move to a state that more closely mirrors her perversity. But Mississippi shouldn't apologize. Mississippi shouldn't bend over backwards to accommodate this teenage malcontent. Mississippi should stand strong. She should leave and go to a state that is more to her way of thinking, or you know, go along to get along in the South. But that's,
well, you know,
that's,
she would probably like to bend over backwards in some extent. It seems to be one of the things they like
well,
to do.
But, that may be the case.
Exactly,
but that's
right.
All we've got to say. Keith, we got to take a break. That's all we've got to say on this story. But, folks, I do encourage you to go to our blog and read it. Post a comment at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Thepoliticalcesspool.org. The blog is on fire this week. We'll be back with more right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. A quick announcement. I want to remind everyone who took advantage of our March fundraising incentive that if you send in the money, you do have for you a reserved copy of Hutton Gibson's book, The Enemy Is Still Here. And for all of you who donated in March to receive the book, those books are going to be shipped on Monday. So keep a close eye on the mailman this week, and you will have your reward. And we do appreciate your support of this radio program and all the help you've given us to help continue to get our word out there. Now, another story covered on the blog in the last couple of days. Big story here in Memphis, I guess the biggest story this week here in Memphis, which is our home base, gunfire at the Memphis Zoo. Now, how could that have happened? Well, here in Memphis, the local zoo often gives out what they call free days, meaning free admission to anyone and everyone who'd like to come and see the animals. Now, that's a very generous proposition, and if Memphis were a majority white city, I'm sure that the offer would provide a safe and enjoyable time for families to take advantage of the wonderful spring weather we've been having lately. But Memphis does have a large black population, and as the United States Department of Justice begrudgingly confirms, blacks commit crimes at an insanely higher rate than whites. Now, it could be debated why this disparity occurs, but it can't be argued that it's a fact. So when the zoo decided to let everyone in for free this week, the local population decided to take them up on the deal, and as you might have expected, gunfire and a public melee would soon follow. As I said, this story has been the top story in the commercial appeal and on all of the local network television affiliates. But unsurprisingly, despite all of the coverage that this story has received, one glaring detail always seems to be conveniently dismissed, that the troublemakers were black and race matters. As I said on CNN in a televised debate pertaining to violent black-on-white crime, crime is a problem that, for whatever reason, always seems to follow non-whites. And the so-called black leaders in this country ought to tackle this problem head-on, but don't hold your breath for that. They should advocate accountability instead of blaming whites for all of their failures. Now, there could have been 100,000 European Americans in the zoo last Tuesday, and there would have been no shootings. Everybody knows that's true, including those who are going to call me a racist for pointing it out. But, Keith, we saw that story and figured, you know, if that wasn't material for the political cesspool, nothing was. And it's a shame that we are continued to be proven right. Nothing more would satisfy me than for me to wake up one day and see the light and say, you know what? I'm wrong about all this, but Keith, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, you know, facts are facts. And, you know, I brought this to your attention. You know, I subscribe to the Communist Appeal and you don't, or as we call the local newspaper, the or local fish wrap, the Commercial Appeal. And, you know, what is so unique about this, or what is so, you know, ironic, is that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Back in the days of segregation, which I remember since I'm that old, guess when the day was in the week when blacks could visit the Memphis Zoo?
Tuesday.
Yes, exactly. And now they have made it, you know, the same way. It's the segregated day. It's the day when the black people go to the zoo. And guess why that is? Because it's free. You know, it's just, it's so predictable. It's like gravity that that's going to happen. And this was an example of what they call today a flash mob. Apparently, some black teenagers said, hey, let's, it's spring break. We're not in school. Let's all go and make a big scene down at the zoo. They had record attendance, over 25,000. There was gunfire. There were fights. There was just absolute chaos throughout. Now, it was almost tantamount to what's probably going on tonight down at the local Chuck E. Cheese. And, you know, this is, you know, it's just like Grandma said, you can dress them up, but you can't take them to town. Now, why in the world is the local media and the nationwide media so careful not to mention the obvious? It's because that's the taboo topic. That's the thing that you can't mention. It's like in Itawamba County. You know, whenever they think they have something negative to report about white people, that the race of the perpetrators is front and center. But when it's black people, the silence is deafening.
And you know, Keith, I don't expect the mainstream media to just all of a sudden adopt our positions on these seemingly sensitive issues, but what they should do, which they never will, but what they should do is allow this to be part of the debate. Let us debate whether or not race or genetics influences a person's behavior in any way. They can take their position on it. We'll take ours. Let's hash it out in the public forum, in the court of public opinion, as I always say. But they don't do that. They pretend that something as important as genes and race could in no way at all possibly play a role in the way we behave, the way we congregate, the way we speak, the way we act, so on and so forth. But yeah, I mean, so the bottom line, though, and it should be debated. This absolutely should be something that we should speak freely about. But yeah, you know, bottom line, to wrap this story up, you let everybody in for free. A lot of minorities come in, and what do? They just start shooting guns in the middle of the zoo for no reason,
and
shooting up in the air to create a panic.
Who knows what else?
Yeah, and who knows what else?
That's we don't even have to debate it. We just have to be able to recognize the reality of it and to report it accurately.
We get called all sorts of names that certainly I don't believe are applicable for merely trying to have a conversation, a sensible, professional, honest conversation about the way we see things. But, you know, we get shouted down, we get called names, we get attacked. And, you know, to say that that is unfair or unfortunate is obviously an understatement. But nevertheless, it's stories like this, once again, that separates the political cesspool from every other radio program, I believe, in this country, every other mainstream syndicated show that's being broadcast on AM, FM, Internet, what have you. And you compare the way we're trying to bring these very important stories to your attention, and the way Sean Hannity treats such stories. Keith, you know, Confederate History Month is kicking off. And Confederate History Month, by the way, people, that's not something we made up. April is actually officially recognized in many southern states as Confederate History Month. This is a real celebration. You might not know it if you waited for the newspaper to inform you of that fact, but this isn't just a political cesspool-only celebration. It's Confederate History Month truly does exist, and we're excited about that, and that's when we always play our role to promote it. But since we are in Confederate History Month, and to further accentuate the difference between our program and shows like Hannity, Keith, what did Sean Hannity have to say on St. Patrick's Day that really caught your attention?
Well, he had a little bumper that he created for the occasion of St. Patrick's Day. Of course, being Irish himself, or of Irish descent, this is a big deal to him, and he made it a big deal on his show. He had a leprechaun with a little Irish voice like this, you know, like the guy on a Lucky Charms commercial or something. And he had some ethnic liberal from, you know, obviously the East Coast or something, threatening to beat him up. And he says, I'm afraid I'm going to have to sanitize you. And he, you know, you hear this noise, you know, this sound that sounds like, you know, Tinkerbell spreading fairy dust or something. And all of a sudden, the guy is turned into a brain jackass. And he says, I've decided to turn you into a jackass. He says, like you weren't one already. And then the next one is a West Coast type of voice, liberal, who's taking him in on the issues. And then he hanitizes it, this one, the leprechaun does. And the guy suddenly starts speaking nothing but, you know, a wonderful adulation of Sean Hannity. Then the third one is a southern white named Bubba, who says, I've got a Confederate flag on the back of my truck and this, that, and the other. And he says, well, he says, you're so beyond the pale that we're not going to bother to hanitize you at all. He says, we're just going to banish you. And boom, you know, that's what happens.
All right. Now, there is Sean Hannity, supposedly a voice for conservatism, banishing the most conservative element of our population. White Southerners are the most hardcore conservative voting Republicans that you could possibly have. This is supposedly Hannity's base. And this is the kind of contempt that he treats his people in. That is not your voice, ladies and gentlemen. We are your voice, and people need to break free.
I thought it was wonderful that he did that, because it shows exactly what neoconservatives have in store for real conservatives. The conservatives that call it red state America.
Gotta take a break, Keith. We'll pick it up right after that. Sit tight.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, right before that last break, we were once again drawing the obvious conclusion that Sean Hannity is not only a fraud, but an obnoxious fraud, mocking and condemning his very base. I mean, the people who tune into the Sean Hannity show are the Southern Republicans, are the red state Americans with Confederate flags on their trucks. These are the people who listen to this charlatan, and he has the audacity on his own program to ridicule them. I tell you, folks, you can do better than that, and you are doing better than that if you're listening to this program. And there's other good people, obviously, out there. We have worked with so many great intellectual giants, one of whom apparently has opted for retirement this week. Paul Craig Roberts, in another article we've put up on our blog this week, issued his final article, I guess you would say. He was, of course, Paul Craig Roberts' assistant secretary of the Treasury during Reagan's first term. He was associate editor of the Wall Street Journal and held numerous academic appointments. He is the author of several books that should be on everyone's required reading list. But more importantly to me, he was a friend of the Political Cesspool radio program and made numerous appearances as our exclusive guest, I think at least four or five. And you can, of course, browse our extensive library of broadcast archives at thepoliticalcesspool.org for the complete collection. They're all available on demand, dating back a couple of years. And I certainly hope Dr. Roberts will reconsider his retirement, because assets like him are few and far between. But should he not, we did post up on the blog this week a taste of Paul Craig Roberts at his absolute literary best, his Wham! Article, in which he defends the white heterosexual able-bodied males. And Keith, that's one that I know you're very fond of also.
Well, Paul Craig Roberts was a first-rate journalist and commentator, and in recent years he was kind of scared off of talking about anything that touched on the issue of race. I guess he wanted to preserve his career as a journalist, but he found out, like Sam Francis and others before him, that there's no pacifying the left. They're like a school of sharks. Once they taste blood in the water, they go into a feeding frenzy. And Paul Craig Roberts, though, like Sam Francis, came up with a wonderful analytical tool for debunking and breaking down the effect and the true reason for things like hate crime laws, affirmative action, hate speech codes. and he called it the new feudalism. You know, in feudal Europe, in the medieval Europe, you had a feudal system in which there were differential legal rights between nobles and everybody else called serfs. And these serfs, for example, could not give offense to or speak harshly about nobles. If they did, it was a legal offense. On the other hand, there was no corresponding legal offense when a noble spoke harshly about a serf. And because you never really knew what was going to offend a noble, the smartest thing to do was to have as little discourse with them as possible. And whenever you did, you had to be extremely deferential to avoid creating a boo-boo. Well, that's exactly what we've got today. We've got differential rights. For example, you were talking about that on your blog, the situation in Los Angeles where three white teachers were suspended for offending blacks about Black History Month by giving some of their students posters about RuPaul, O.J. Simpson, and I think there's one third one. I forget.
Dennis Rodman.
But, you know, the kicker, like you said, is that all of those three, RuPaul, Dennis Rodman, and O.J. Simpson, were on an approved list of subjects for Black History Month promulgated by the school board. And if a black person had done that, of course it would have gone on without comment. But since these were white teachers, they're subject to a totally different standard. It's like George Orwell in Animal Farm said, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others, and some have no rights at all, and that's white people now.
Well, and this, you know, you mentioned that article, which is something we featured on the blog a couple of weeks ago. That was picked up by Edmund Connolly, who I also want to give a tip of the hat to. Edmund Connolly, the freelance writer, academic, and expert on the cinema arts. He's a frequent writer for the Occidental Observer, has previously written for the Occidental Quarterly. He appeared as our guest, Keith, as you well know, on the May 23rd, 2009 edition of our program, and we had an absolutely excellent interview that I would highly encourage those in our listening audience to revisit. But since Edmund Connolly's debut appearance with us, he himself has become a big fan of our work and had this to say in a recent column about our show, or specifically about me and you, Keith, and I quote, "Their facility with the English language leaves me embarrassed. It is a superior form of communication." And from there, Edmund Connolly's column continues by recounting some of the topics we've covered on more recent programs. Folks, that's all linked up for you at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Check it out. I got to say this, though, to have such high praise, and I mean this from the very marrow of my bones, to have such high praise come from anyone is indeed an honor. But to receive such a compliment from a writer and a scholar as prolific as Edmund Connolly is even more remarkable and humbling. But we've linked up a couple of his columns there at thepoliticalcesspool.org tonight. I know I'm plugging the blog quite a bit, but we've put up 10 new articles in the last couple of days. You got to check them out. And truly, if we are ever judged by the friends we keep, people like Paul Craig Roberts and Edmund Connolly, Pat Buchanan, General Hal Moore, Hutton Gibson, and so many others who appear frequently as our guests, if we're judged by the friends we keep, there's no doubt we're going to come out on top. I can't tell you what a joy it is to be able to work with men of Edmund Connolly's caliber on a weekly basis. It's just one of the many privileges that this radio program affords us. But more importantly, by working together and exchanging ideas with one another, solutions will present themselves, and that is what our show is here to facilitate. And that being said, Keith, I know you would like to give a shout-out to our good friend Edmund.
Right. After hearing and reading Edmund's comments, I feel like Mike Myers on his Wayne World skits for Saturday Night Live, "We're not worthy. We're not worthy." You know? I'm bowing down. I can't believe it. He is one of my favorites. And the Occidental Observer and the Occidental Quarterly are likewise one of my favorite publications. He's obviously one of the sharpest guys there. He really tackles popular culture in the movies and also this kind of differential legal status that has developed between whites and quote-unquote protected minorities. He focused on something that we bring up quite often, Sam Francis's concept of anarcho-tyranny, and I'd like to suggest also that he might want to read some Paul Craig Roberts on the new feudalism. You know, people, you know, they hear something like hate crime law is being proposed, and they say, well, so what? You know, it ought to be punished. But should it be punished on a differential basis? That's what you need to focus on. You are now the new serf in the American feudal system, ladies and gentlemen, and you need to recognize that, and you need to resist it. Edmund Connolly certainly does. Our hat is off to Edmund, and Edmund, many thanks. Stay in touch with us. We love to hear from you.
Yeah, and you know, we got to get Edmund back on the program. One of the things he's most known for, one of his great assets, is his ability to articulately review movies. And you've got a film right up his alley you want to see in a forthcoming column, a forthcoming review. Keith,
well, it's really not up his alley, because normally he tells us about the hidden leftist, liberal, cultural Marxist message.
It's right up our alley.
movies.
It's right up our alley, anyway.
A movie which was done before Brown versus Education and is an exemplar of the old American. We'd love him to give a debunking of that. It's the movie Shane, starring Alan Ladd of Hot Springs, Arkansas, one of our favorite movies. In fact, I just loaned it to you, James, so you can watch it.
Yeah, you know, people can only see the kind of camaraderie that those of us in the Political Cesspool staff share on a weekly basis. Keith and I were breaking bread in my home today. We had some sub sandwiches talking about what we were going to discuss on the program tonight. He brought me over a movie, and we share this familial bond that's important to possess all throughout the year, but even more important when you're working together on something as important as this movement, and you're in the great holiday seasons like Christmas and Easter, and it's just rewarding to surround yourself with such good friends, men of such high character and moral content like Keith and Bill Rowland and Winston Smith and Eddie and all the other people at Liberty News Radio and here at WLRM Radio that we work with. It's a joy, it's an honor, it's a privilege. And then you read things like this from Edmund Connolly, and you look at the people that you surround yourself with as guests. And Keith, I tell you, we're very lucky, very blessed. And, of course, blessed, most importantly of all, to share the wonderful listening audience that we have. And, again, ladies and gentlemen, feel free to be a part of this radio program. Go to our website. Post your own comments on the blog. We have frequently, in recent weeks, been reading emails and replies to the blog entries on the air. We want to hear your comments, your criticisms, your concerns, everything, your critiques. Go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. You can send us a private email or go on to the blog and post a comment to some of your favorite articles. Had a couple of days last week where I was tied up with other projects. There was about 4 days in which the blog kind of sat there idly. But over the course of the last 3 days, we put up about 10 new articles. We try to put up about two or three new articles each day. So mark us as a daily read, and we'll be back right after this.
Something's got a hold on me. The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room, all the way down to the amen.